Hello, this is Joe Penrod with the News Gazette, dated January 8, 2021. We'll begin today's reading on page A3 with the article entitled, Trump Finally Faces Reality Amid Talk of Early Ouster. With 13 days left in his term, President Donald Trump finally bent to reality Thursday amid growing talk of trying to force him out early, acknowledging he'll peacefully leave after Congress affirmed his defeat. Trump led off a video from the White House by condemning the violence carried out in his name a day earlier at the Capitol. Then, for the first time on camera, he admitted his presidency would soon end, though he declined to mention President-elect Joe Biden by name or explicitly say he lost. A new administration will be inaugurated on January 20th, Trump said in the video. My focus now turns to ensuring a smooth, orderly, and seamless transition of power. This moment calls for healing and reconciliation. The address, which appeared designed to stave off talk of a forced early eviction, came at the end of a day when the cornered president stayed out of sight in the White House. Silenced on some of his favorite internet lines of communication, he watched the resignations of several top aides, including two cabinet secretaries. And as officials sifted through the aftermath of the pro-Trump mob's siege of the U.S. Capitol, there was growing discussion of impeaching him a second time or invoking the 25th Amendment to oust him from the Oval Office. The invasion of the Capitol building, a powerful symbol of the nation's democracy, rattled Republicans and Democrats alike. They struggled with how best to contain the impulses of a president deemed too dangerous to control his own social media accounts, but who remains commander-in-chief of the world's greatest military. I'm not worried about the next election. I'm worried about getting through the next 14 days, said Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, one of Trump's staunchest allies. He condemned the president's role in Wednesday's riots and said, if something else happens, all options would be on the table. Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi declared that the president of the United States incited an armed insurrection against America. She called him a very dangerous person who should not continue in office. This is urgent, an emergency of the highest magnitude. President Donald Trump greets the crowd at the Stop the Steal rally Wednesday in Washington, D.C., where he told attendees to march to the Capitol, after which they stormed the building. Also on page A3 is an article, Social Platforms Flex Power, Lock Down Trump's Accounts. After years of treating President Donald Trump's inflammatory rhetoric with a light touch, Facebook and Instagram are silencing his accounts for the rest of his presidency. The move, which many called long overdue following Wednesday's deadly insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, is also a reminder of the enormous power that social media platforms can wield when they choose. Facebook and Instagram said Thursday they will bar Trump from posting at least until the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden. A 12-hour lockdown of Trump's Twitter account ended Thursday, and the president used his restored access to post a video in which he acknowledged for the first time that his presidency will end soon. It remains unclear how the platforms will handle Trump once he leaves office and is no longer shielded from enforcement of most rules by his status as a world leader. And some critics saw the moves as cynical efforts by the companies to position themselves for a post-Trump future. They no longer have to fear Donald Trump, said Rashad Robinson of Color of Change, a group that has pushed tech companies to do more to rein in hate speech. He said Facebook's action was in the best interest of Facebook. In announcing the move, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg said the risk of allowing Trump to use the platform is too great after his incitement of a mob Wednesday. He said Trump's account will be locked for at least the next 2 weeks, and possibly indefinitely. The shocking events of the last 24 hours clearly demonstrate that President Donald Trump intends to use his remaining time in office to undermine the peaceful and lawful transition of power to his elected successor, Joe Biden, Zuckerberg wrote. Also on page A3 are three other articles concerning the aftermath of the attack on the U.S. Capitol. The first is entitled, Questions, Ousters, Damage Assessment of Pro-Trump Mob's Violent Siege Will Be Long-Lasting. This is written by Lisa Mascaro and Matthew Daly of the Associated Press. The violent siege of the Capitol by President Donald Trump's supporters forced painful new questions across government Thursday about his fitness to remain in office for two more weeks, the ability of the police to secure the complex, and the future of the Republican Party in a post-Trump era. The rampage that shocked the world and left the country on edge forced the resignations of three top Capitol security officials over the failure to stop the breach. It led lawmakers to demand a review of operations and an FBI briefing over what they called a terrorist attack. And it is prompting a broader reckoning over Trump's tenure in office and what comes next for a torn nation. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said any remaining day with the president in power could be a horror show for America. Likewise, Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer said the attack on the Capitol was an insurrection against the United States incited by the president, and Trump must not stay in office one day longer. Pelosi and Schumer called for invoking the 25th Amendment to the Constitution to force Trump from office before President-elect Joe Biden is inaugurated on January 20th. Schumer said he and Pelosi tried to call Vice President Mike Pence early Thursday to discuss that option, but were unable to connect with him. At least one Republican lawmaker joined the effort. The procedure allows for the vice president and a majority of the cabinet to declare the president unfit for office. The vice president then becomes acting president. Pelosi said if the cabinet does not act swiftly, the House may proceed to impeach Trump. Meanwhile, other Republicans who echoed Trump's false claims of a fraudulent election, including rising stars and some party leaders, faced angry, unsettled peers, but also those cheering them on. With tensions high, the Capitol shuttered, and lawmakers not scheduled to return until the inauguration, an uneasy feeling of stalemate settled over a main seat of national power as Trump remained holed up at the White House. U.S. Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sund, under pressure from Schumer, Pelosi, and other congressional leaders, was forced to resign. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell asked for and received the resignation of the Sergeant of Arms of the Senate, Michael Stenger, effective immediately. Paul Irving, the longtime Sergeant at Arms of the House, also resigned. Sund had defended his department's response to the storming of the Capitol, saying officers had acted valiantly when faced with thousands of individuals involved in violent, riotous actions. In his first public comment on the mayhem, Sund said in a statement early Thursday that rioters attacked Capitol Police and other law enforcement officers with metal pipes, discharged chemical irritants, and took up other weapons against our officers. It was unlike any I have ever experienced in my 30 years in law enforcement here in Washington, D.C., said Soon, a former city police official. Washington Mayor Muriel Bowser called the police response a failure. Lawmakers from both parties pledged to investigate and question whether a lack of preparedness allowed a mob to occupy and vandalize the building. Protesters were urged by Trump during a rally near the White House early Wednesday to head to Capitol Hill, where lawmakers were scheduled to confirm Biden's presidential victory. The mob swiftly broke through police barriers, smashed windows, and paraded through the halls, sending lawmakers into hiding. The next article is entitled, Capitol Police Rejected Offers of Federal Help. 3 days after supporters of President Donald Trump rioted at the Capitol, the Pentagon asked the U.S. Capitol Police if it needed National Guard manpower. And as the mob descended on the building Wednesday, Justice Department leaders reached out to offer up FBI agents. The police turned them down both times, according to senior defense officials and two people familiar with the matter. Despite plenty of warnings of a possible insurrection and ample resources and time to prepare, the Capitol Police planned only for a free speech demonstration. Still stinging from the uproar over the violent response by law enforcement to protests last June near the White House, officials also were intent on avoiding any appearance that the federal government was deploying active duty or National Guard troops against Americans. The result is the U.S. Capitol was overrun Wednesday, and officers in a law enforcement agency with a large operating budget and experience in high security events protecting lawmakers were overwhelmed for the world to see. Four protesters died, including one shot inside the building. The rioting and loss of control has raised serious questions over security at the Capitol for future events. This was a failure of imagination, a failure of leadership, said Houston Police Chief Art Acevedo, whose department responded to several large protests last year following the death of George Floyd. The Capitol Police must do better, and I don't see how we can get around that. Finally, on page A3, an article entitled Racial Double Standard on Clear Display. Black Lives Matter Protests 2020. Overwhelming force from law enforcement in dozens of cities. Chemical dispersants, rubber bullets and hand-to-hand combat with largely peaceful crowds and some unruly vandals and looters. More than 14,000 arrests. The U.S. Capitol, January 6, 2021. Barely more than a few dozen arrests, several weapons seized, improvised explosive devices found, members of a wilding mob escorted from the premises, some not even in handcuffs. The key difference? The first set of protesters were overwhelmingly Black Americans and their allies. The second group was overwhelmingly white Americans who support outgoing President Donald Trump's baseless claims of election fraud. The violent breaching of the halls of power on Capitol Hill by the insurrectionist mob Wednesday, which left one woman dead of a police gunshot wound, represents one of the plainest displays of a racial double standard in both modern and recent history. When Black people protest for our lives, we are all too often met by National Guard troops or police equipped with assault rifles, shields, tear gas, and battle helmets, the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation said in a statement. When white people attempt a coup, they are met by an underwhelming number of law enforcement personnel who act powerless to intervene, going so far as to pose for selfies with tourists, with terrorists. While we're on the subject of the insurrectionist attack on the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday, we turn to the opinion page, page B2, for two editorials. First is an editorial by the News Gazette entitled Mob Rule Cannot, Will Not Stand. Wednesday's sickening display of mobocracy was an indefensible assault on the democratic ideals that drove this nation's founding and let it prosper. There is no justifying or minimizing the contemptible nature of what occurred Wednesday when members of a violent mob invaded the U.S. Capitol. The only good that can come from it is, if this nation should be so lucky, for the public to emphatically reject this kind of political nihilism as an assault on the concept of self-government. Mobs cannot rule, they can only destroy. As was evident in the aftermath of the assault on the nation's capital by enraged supporters of the loser in the 2020 presidential election, Donald Trump. Abraham Lincoln, the nation's 16th president, put this kind of misconduct in the proper context when he said that, quote, no grievance is a fit object of redress by mob law, unquote. That's because mobs know no law. They are unthinking beasts that epitomize the kind of authoritarian rule they purport to oppose. It is, of course, no surprise that Trump was a major player in Wednesday's insurrection. His speech at the rally that preceded it, one in which he said the people will not stand for his defeat, could only have further fanned the flames of discord. There is simply no question the perpetually aggrieved Trump, a man who sees only himself in a picture that is much bigger, set a tone that stirred the crowd's emotions. That, of course, is intolerable, and there will be consequences in the coming days, some of which will be driven by partisan animosities. Those who stormed the Capitol appear to have been driven by the desire to disrupt or stop the formal declaration of President-elect Joe Biden's victory in the November election. They clearly believe, like Trump, that vote fraud generated an improper result. But the Trump campaign had its day, many days, in fact, in court, and came up short. The only viable avenue for the losing side in that circumstance is to accept the results and resolve to come back in 4 years and do better. That's the way the game is played in a democracy. To do as was done, did the mob members even have a viable goal other than chaos? Was nothing more than mindless, self-defeating violence. Later, in a joint session that went well into Thursday morning, legislators reconvened to certify Biden's victory. That display of resolve demonstrates how a serious response by responsible officials can quickly bring a mob to heel. What now? Those arrested must face the consequences. An orderly presidential transition must and will take place. On January 20th, this nation will have a new president. There will no doubt be political fallout from what occurred. So let the democratic process take its natural course as the public reflects on the tawdry, imbecilic, and futile events in Washington, D.C. Also on page B2, the opinion page, is an op-ed column by columnist George Will, entitled The Three Seditionists. Trump, Hawley, Cruz must forever bear the stain of the heartbreaking spectacle they fomented. The three repulsive architects of Wednesday's heartbreaking spectacle, mobs desecrating the Republic's noblest building and preventing the completion of a constitutional process, must be named and forever shunned. They are President Donald Trump and Senators Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz. Trump lit the fuse for the riot before the election with his successful effort to delegitimize the election in the eyes of his supporters. But Wednesday's explosion required the help of Hawley, a Republican from Missouri, and Cruz, Republican of Texas. Hawley announced his intention to object to the certification of some states' electoral votes for no better reason than that there had been an avalanche of allegations of election irregularities, allegations fomented by the loser of the election. By doing so, Hawley turned what should have been a perfunctory episode in our civic liturgy of post-election civility into a synthetic drama. He turned this moment into the focus of the hitherto unfocused fury that Trump had been stoking for many weeks. And Cruz, by organizing support for Hawley among other Republican senators and senators-elect, gave Hawley's grotesque self-promotion an ersatz cloak of larger purpose. Shortly before the mob breached the Senate chamber, Cruz stood on the Senate floor. With his characteristic unctuousness, he regretted the existence of what he and kindred spirits have not only done nothing to refute, but have themselves also nurtured, a pandemic of suspicions that the election was rigged. "I want to take a moment to speak to my Democratic colleagues," Cruz said. "I understand your guy is winning right now." Read those weaselly words again. He was not speaking to his colleagues. He was speaking to the kind people who were at that instant assaulting the Capitol. He was nurturing the very delusions that soon would cause louts to be roaming the Senate chamber, the fantasy that Joe Biden has not won the election, but is only winning, quote, right now. The Trump-Hawley-Cruz insurrection against constitutional government will be an indelible stain on the nation. They, however, will not be so permanent. In 2 weeks, one of them will be removed from office by the constitutional processes he neither fathoms nor favors. It will take longer to scrub the other two from public life. Until that hygienic outcome is accomplished, from this day forward, everything they say or do or advocate should be disregarded as patent attempts to distract attention from the lurid fact of what they have become. Each will wear a scarlet S as a seditionist. George Will, a native of Champaign, writes for the Washington Post Writers Group. He can be reached at georgewill@washpost.com. On page B1 of today's News Gazette is an article written by Ben Zigterman of the News Gazette entitled, "Davis, Comments Unacceptable, Apology Expected." U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, Republican of Taylorville, called on newly elected Congresswoman Mary Miller to apologize for her comment this week about Adolf Hitler being, quote, right on one thing. Miller, a Republican of Oakland, was roundly criticized for the comments she made at a rally Tuesday in front of the U.S. Capitol when she said that, quote, Hitler was right on one thing. He said, whoever has the youth has the future. Congresswoman Mary Miller's comments are unacceptable, Davis said in a statement Thursday. I spoke with her about it on the House floor yesterday. As a newly elected member of Congress, Congresswoman Miller must understand that words matter and they have consequences. I know yesterday was a difficult time for the country, and Mary and I happened to be evacuated off the House floor together and placed for hours in a safe location, Davis continued. Because of these circumstances, I fully expect Congresswoman Miller to offer an apology and a retraction of her comments soon. As of Thursday afternoon, she has yet to publicly apologize. On Wednesday, Miller's Twitter account tried to deflect the criticism by comparing left-wing radicals to evil dictators. Congresswoman Miller's statement was a denunciation of evil dictators' efforts to re-educate young people and similar efforts by left-wing radicals in our country today, the tweet said. A spokeswoman for Miller has yet to respond to a request for comment on whether an apology is coming. Miller was criticized Wednesday by everyone from the Illinois Republican Party and Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker to the CEO of the Anti-Defamation League. Turning to news of the coronavirus, we go back to page A1, the front page of today's paper, to see an article by Deborah Pressey of the News Gazette entitled, "Hospital Counts Key in Easing Restrictions." Want to get out from under Illinois' Tier 3 COVID-19 mitigation rules anytime soon? With mass vaccinations on the horizon, this isn't the time to ease precautions, area hospital officials advise. Reducing COVID-19 hospitalizations, currently the one factor East Central Illinois' 21-county Region 6 is falling short on, is at least partially under everyone's control, they said. I would say if people really want things to change, we have to get people to consistently mask, and unfortunately, people aren't doing that, said Dr. James Hildebrandt, Vice President of Medical Affairs at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Coles County, one of more than a dozen hospitals in Region 6. Governor J.B. Pritzker announced Wednesday that any of the state's 11 regions can move out of Tier 3 restrictions starting January 15th when they meet certain criteria for reducing infections and hospitalizations. Tier 3 rules include a ban on indoor service at bars and restaurants, but a move back to Tier 2 would include that same restriction. Region 6, which includes Champaign, Douglas, Ford, Piatt, and Vermilion counties, is currently meeting state markers for test positivity rates and capacity levels for hospital beds and intensive care units. But this region is exceeding the limit on hospitalizations. To exit Tier 3, a region must have had declining hospitalizations for 7 out of the 10 previous days, and Region 6 has had increases for 7 out of the 10 most recent days. Meanwhile, the number of Champaign County residents hospitalized with COVID-19 has steadily risen this week from 9 on Sunday to 23 Thursday. There were 66 COVID-19 patients in Carle Foundation Hospital as of Thursday, plus 4 at Carle Hoopston Regional Health Center and another 9 at Carle Richland Memorial Hospital in Olney, all within Region 6. Also in Region 6, Decatur Memorial Hospital had 17 COVID-19 patients Thursday, while Sarah Bush Lincoln had 25. Sarah Bush Lincoln had as many as 47 COVID-19 patients in the hospital in early November. Lately, Hildebrandt said, the number has flattened and remained in the high 20s and low 30s. Even though today is better than yesterday was, there is not a significant trend that we can identify at this point, neither downward or upward, he said. Decatur Memorial Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ted Clark said surges in October and November were absolutely awful for the region. But COVID-19 cases at his hospital have also leveled off to around 20 a day for December and the first week of January, he said. Lynn Barnes, Chief Operating Officer at Carle Foundation Hospital, said the number of COVID-19 hospitalizations there has also been fairly flat in recent weeks. But she, Clark, and Hildebrandt said it's too soon to tell if there's going to be a post-holiday surge. We've been keeping a pretty close eye on it, Barnes said. I think we're certainly not out of the woods yet. Clark said it will take until 2 or 3 weeks after the holidays for holiday-related infections to turn up in the testing numbers. It may be even longer than that for people infected over the holidays to end up in the hospital, because sometimes people deal with COVID-19 at home for a time before needing to be hospitalized. OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center President Brad Solberg said the Danville Hospital was expecting a surge after Thanksgiving, but instead had seen a downward trend in COVID-19 admissions. I may be too optimistic, but I'm hoping if we get to the middle of January without any huge increases, hopefully we're headed in the right direction, he said. That's especially because vaccinations are underway, he said. OSF Sacred Heart has had a lot of its staff members opt to be vaccinated, he said. Carle Health is nearly halfway to having the 11,000 employees in its system vaccinated, according to Barnes. Sarah Bush Lincoln is also nearing the halfway mark with staff vaccinations. About 1,100 have been vaccinated so far out of 2,700, and some second doses are beginning to be administered, according to Sarah Bush Lincoln spokeswoman Patty Peterson. People may think exiting Tier 3 restrictions is entirely out of the control, but it's not, Solberg said. Wear your mask, keep washing your hands, and watch your distances to other people, he urged. At this point of where we're at in terms of not being able to meet that threshold, everything we can do within the county certainly helps, he said. Hildebrandt said he sees the best chance of improvement in a number of people being vaccinated. Many in the Coles County area haven't been vigilant about wearing masks and practicing social distancing, he said. Dining in at restaurants is still going on, regardless of the state ban, and in some stores, fewer than half of customers are wearing masks, he said. A behavioral change would be a quick ticket to reducing infections, Hildebrandt said, but people are not likely to change their behavior at this point. Hopefully, once the vaccination effort has really had a chance to take hold, that will really decrease transmission significantly, he said. Bottom line, don't let up on precautions and get the vaccine when it's available, Barnes urged. We're so close, Clark said. He understands people are getting frustrated waiting for the vaccine, he said. Avoid risky behaviors such as big gatherings and indoor dining without masks and realize the restrictions are in place for everyone's protection, he advised. COVID-19 can be a long illness, with some patients in the hospital for a month, Clark said. If we can just stay the course and follow the mitigation efforts, we've got a good chance of getting out of it, he said. A quick look at the weather forecast shows today a forecast high of 34, mostly cloudy with a 30% chance of a few flurries before noon, northwest to north wind of 10 to 16 miles per hour. Overnight, mostly cloudy, a north wind of 8 to 16 miles an hour, and gusty. On Saturday, we'll see a high of 33, a low of 24, partly cloudy, north wind 7 to 14 miles an hour, and then overnight on Saturday, mostly cloudy, with a northwest wind of 6 to 12 miles an hour. Then finally on Sunday, a high of 32, a low of 23, partly cloudy, northwest wind 7 to 14 miles an hour. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for January 8th, 2021. Please stay tuned.